Welcome to the Functional Medicine and Natural Healing Podcast, where we share the secrets to upgrade your digestion, improve your hormones, restore your immune system, and detoxify your body. I'm your host, Dr. Houston Anderson. Now let's get started. The following discussion is for educational purposes only. It is not intended to diagnose or treat any disease or disease process. Always discuss any medical treatments or medical interventions with your personal physician. All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm here with Dr. Gabe Arichu, and we are going to talk all things thyroid today. So this is one of Dr. Gabe's favorite things to do, or something that we're forced to do all day, every day in the office, because it's trendy and because it's important. So why don't we go ahead and get started? Give us a little bit of info on the thyroid, Doc.
Sure, yeah. So the thyroid is a little butterfly-shaped gland that we got down here in the bottom of our throat near our larynx. It's really, really important, kind of in an acupuncture way. I kind of like thinking of it in that sense. It's related to like fire, and because it's controlling and regulating your metabolism. So without the thyroid creating thyroid hormone, you don't really have an accelerator on your metabolism or, well, a regulator, because it accelerates and slows it down depending on what is needed. And so it's crucially important.
I love that you put that brake pedal on there too, because I think that everyone thinks like more with the thyroid, but it's really about balance with the thyroid. So pretty prevalent in America. You know, the numbers are pretty maybe unreliable. We know that a lot of women have it. A lot of men have it. You know, up to 20% of women are suffering from it. Functional thyroid disorders, honestly, if we were to go at like people that just have symptoms or have an altered hormone level to some degree in any way, shape, or form, that's probably like half of America any given time. You catch a cold, you eat unhealthy for a while, things like that, and all of a sudden your thyroid is going to have dysfunction. And once again, we'll get into like whether it's like an actual root cause or whether it's a symptom kind of as we go on today. But kind of tell us, why don't you give me an idea? Like, so you think you have a thyroid problem, you go to your primary care, what are they going to kind of look at there?
So typically you're going to see maybe one lab ran, sometimes two. So usually they're going to run, like, if they're going to run a thyroid at all, they're going to run TSH and then T4, which, I mean, if you know what's going on with your thyroid, that's not overly bad, like to kind of track things, which we'll talk about. But you're going to miss a whole lot of things if only a TSH is ran, because how often do both of us see a TSH normal, but then the other markers that we like to run or not? And so it ends up being a bit problematic. Things get missed. Hashimoto's gets missed all the time. And partly because, well, what are you going to do with it from a medical standpoint?
Correct. Yeah. So I see that too. Yeah. So you said the TSH, the T4 usually ran. And now I am seeing more like a TPO antibody being run sometimes. Rarely do you see a thyroglobulin antibody. Rarely do you see a free T3, a reverse T3. You don't see many of these labs that are being run by the doctors very often. But yeah, like you said, like, so let's say that you show up with TPO antibodies, which means you might have Hashimoto's. What are they going to do about it? Like, they essentially diagnose you as that's your permanent condition. There's no way for you to get healthier. And they're just kind of waiting for it to be so problematic that they either medicate it at the current time, or they cut it out or irradiate it. So once again, those are aggressive things. So they don't want to be aggressive. Their version of preventative is just like, let's wait and see. And some of you guys, yeah, may get better just by waiting, right? It does happen, but it's not the most active way to do it. So medication wise, typically they're going to use what? Synthroid level thyroxine as a generic. What else do you see?
If they're going to counteract like the inflammation side of things, you might see methotrexate or some of those ones where they're trying to do a little bit of immune suppression if it's Hashimoto's. But yeah, usually it's synthroid level thyroxine if they're going to do anything at all. Or like you said, they're just going to kind of track and wait and see how things go. And I think that's really one of the main reasons why TPO isn't often ran or any of these antibodies, because what are they going to do about it? It's going to happen. And so all they're going to do is wait till your thyroid hormone's out of range, your TSH is out of range, and then give you some hormone.
So let's be clear on that, Doc. Like, have you seen people's thyroid heal? Right.
I have seen it go into remission. You don't really see a major change. Like, the change that people want to see in the antibodies, they think it's going to go completely back to normal. I always kind of relate it to them like the Epstein-Barr virus antibodies. You're always going to have a little bit of antibody out of range, but ideally it should lower. It should definitely lower. You shouldn't have like, you know, ranges over the 1,000 or whatever it is where their thyroid's just actively being destroyed, but you're going to have it out of range just because that's what's going on now. Their body's actively creating those antibodies, but it shouldn't be where they're constantly feeling the fatigue and all the symptoms. Their thyroid should function relatively normal.
Right. Yeah. And so something to know about antibodies is that they do have half-lives, right? And they're slow. So I think a lot of people might go see a holistic practitioner, run their TPO antibodies day one or something like that, and then come back, you know, even 3 months later and say, hey, they're still there. And everyone's like, yeah, see, they never go away. But the reality that I've seen over time is that the healthier you get, obviously, the lower they're going to be. But even if you were perfectly healthy in a week, it still takes time for your immune system to downregulate those antibodies because they're acting as a protective mechanism. So it's something that I got to remind my patients that oftentimes at a year and a half, I see that they are down to zero or less than 10. But in that first year, it's very unlikely that they're going to get to a zero, you know, in 3 weeks or something like that. Cool studies out there. There's a lot of things coming. And I think we'll do a second thyroid podcast more on some of the details that we've seen in practice. We want this to be more of a broad spectrum one. So in holistic medicine, what are you going to do different than just prescribe a thyroid medication, doc? What are you thinking?
Well, first of all, I want to run a full panel. We need a full panel. You need the free and total T3, T4 hormones. You got to get a good broad example. Like I just went over a thyroid panel today and you know, a lot of the markers could end as well as their age and that they're female kind of point towards what would be most common, Hashimoto's.
Right.
But there wasn't Hashimoto's. They had a relatively, well, functionally low TSH and functionally low T3, which kind of points towards possibly like a conversion issue. That's the reason why it's important to run a full panel, because there's several different patterns that we could be looking at as much as, you know, we think Hashimoto's is everything, so therefore that's the only thing we see. And it's like, no, there's a lot more going on. And sometimes, you know, how often are we treating a secondary thyroid issue without even knowing it just because somebody's tired because they have a viral issue? And so, yeah, if somebody walks in my door and they haven't had a full thyroid panel ran and everything points towards it, they got hair loss, thinning of the outer side of their eyebrow, things like that, fatigue, I'm going to for sure run a panel on them. And it's not that expensive, really. Like that's what's ridiculous. It's cheap. And just get that panel ran so we know what's going on. And then from there, we decide what is best depending on the type of thyroid issue that's going on.
Yeah, I like that. I think I get both in the office. I see people that come in with just their TSH and they're disgusted by their doctor because they didn't run a full panel. And I see both ways. Like I don't want anyone to think that a TSH doesn't have any value, right?
100%.
I think a lot of people are just they always want their T3, they always want the T4, the free, the reverse T3, the uptake numbers, and all of those give us additional information. I think we'll save most of that lab detail for the second podcast. Maybe some common patterns in lab testing, so people can kind of diagnose at home a little bit better without having to call us. But I do say like your TSH has value if you're doing everything else. And so that's the one thing that I always say. So I'll often run a TSH, we'll run a full panel at first and then follow up. If the TSH is already at a 5, my first goal is get that TSH lower. I could care less what all the other numbers are. Then once that TSH is lower, now we rerun everything and see, okay, are we optimized? Because you can still feel pretty bad with a normal TSH is our point. But if the TSH is already off, that's kind of enough to get started, because all of the other markers, unbeknownst to many people, all the other markers don't tell you exactly what the problem is. They just tell you you have another problem, right? So you can see a little bit of a T3, T4 conversion issue on your labs, but why is it there? Why isn't the liver converting? Why isn't the gut converting? Who's going to go and figure out that information for you? So that's where it's like you can take whatever you have and get started. But then, you know, if you've addressed some things and you don't feel better, definitely that's going to be pretty serious. Now, hyperthyroid, not too common. Do you see hyperthyroid very often in your office?
Yeah, this year, I haven't actually seen it. Last year, it was interesting. I had 3 or 4 Graves in my office. Like I was surprised. It just seemed like one right after the other. But not this year. I haven't really seen much. But I have had people with Graves disease come in. And I mean, you treat it relatively the same to Hashimoto's. It just has different symptoms.
Yeah, the big thing I always say with Graves, it's hard because if you ever get into like a storm that's going on with Graves, we're kind of limited in what we can do. You do end up in the ER, the hospital. We don't have medications that can, you know, instantly kind of turn that off. And so that's why you'll actually see very few people come to a holistic practitioner for Graves, because essentially, let's say that they're having a thyroid storm from Graves disease, like their heart palpitations are so intense, their heart rate's so fast, they're running to the ER as fast as possible, and they never really have the time, versus Hashimoto's or hypothyroidism comes on slow, and they get more tired, and it happens over the course of, you know, 5 to 10 years even sometimes. And so they're often like, you know, have time to kind of meet with one of us and kind of try and figure some things out, like, hey, I just don't feel right. But oftentimes that thyroid storm can hit quick and you just end up in the hospital.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Thankfully, I haven't had to deal with that. And these people were relatively well. They just wanted to see what kind of natural route could help them.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. What do you think the most common patient presentation is for thyroid? Someone comes in and they suspect they have a thyroid. What does this, I'm just going to say it, female look like to you?
Well, I mean, they're 30s, 40s usually. They're going to be tired. They're going to be sunk. Weight gain is oftentimes a thing. Hair loss, the outer third of the eyebrow, that's kind of random. I don't really see it all the time, but it's definitely there when I see it.
Right.
Sometimes there's gut issues. Sometimes there's some mental health issues, like a little bit of anxiety or depression. But usually it's fatigue, hair loss, and maybe a gut issue. That's probably the most common.
Yeah, very, very cool. And I would say, obviously, the female coming in, her biggest complaint is weight gain, right? Yeah, but that the big thing there is that nowadays, because I think that a lot of the holistic community is aware of thyroid disorders, a lot of people are coming in for weight gain, but it really has nothing to do with their thyroid, right?
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, what's the most common issue that we got in America? Insulin resistance.
Yeah. And so
that's going to be a secondary thyroid issue.
Correct. So let's start talking about that. So what are some of the root causes or things that you see of causes of hypothyroidism, Doc?
So with hypo, number one is going to be Hashimoto's. That's the most common. You're going to see that a lot. We can go into detail on that. But the other one probably is blood sugar, insulin issues. I see that quite frequently, especially with a TSH that's below 1.8.
Right.
That's pretty common. I mean, like you said, we can go into detail on those labs later. But that and then hormones are going to be at play. But again, they're kind of secondary. You'll look at the thyroid and maybe there's some support that you need to give, but the solution is elsewhere. Whereas with Hashimoto's, and I mean, technically even with Hashimoto's, it's your immune system. It's not the thyroid. The thyroid is just getting the brunt of the attack. And so the immune system needs to be addressed. What is causing the immune system to be on high alert, which is very different from the medical community who says that the immune system went haywire. It's like, right. Yeah, your body's not dumb. It's just on high alert because it's been impacted by what we would call a foreign invader or an offender or something like that, an antigen that has repeatedly caused it to be on alert.
Yeah. So common antigens there, obviously infections, food, and then toxins, right? And in today's toxic world, it could be heavy metals. That's a simple, you know, one that we would blame. It could be something like mold, but the reality is like, even like the plastics, the estrogen of plastics act as a huge problem there. In fact, I do find hormones, aka estrogen, to be a huge problem with thyroid, but I often wonder, and I don't always differentiate, if it's just estrogenic chemicals or actually systemic estrogen from themselves. Sometimes I don't really care because I'm just going to detox it either way, but probably I should be looking into like what's the plastic load in the body, which is probably pretty high on so many people these days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous how often we're drinking water bottles in plastic water bottles, all that stuff.
Yeah. And one, I think, you know, just so we have autoimmune is the most important. Iodine deficiency is pretty important. And as far as iodine deficiency, it's funny. I know there's a lot of saying that like we don't get any iodine in our diet and stuff like that. I try not to go too far into like there's no way to be healthy without like taking a supplement, because I like people to be healthy without supplements. Right.
Generally speaking, for sure.
But the amount of bromide, which is probably the most toxic competitor for iodine in our diets. It just keeps increasing. In fact, I saw a diagram the other day, which is showing how much bromide is actually in the car plastics that you put your arms on. And I had no idea that that all the car pieces are high in bromide. And here we are, we sit in our cars, rub our arms against it all day long. But I'll have to add that diagram somewhere, maybe on Instagram, but it was just kind of like weird. I was like, well, where do we get all our bromide? And we all think like gluten, right? Our brominated bread and flour. But it was weird to see you don't even think about so many places. So all these chemicals are being put into everything, specifically
fluoride. You got your other ones too. You got your fluoride and chlorine as well, yeah. Like going swimming in the swimming pool all the time. I mean, there's a lot of competitors to iodine for sure.
I know in Arizona, we all have swimming pools here. I don't, but we all do. And it's like, you know, everyone's always asking, do I go to a saltwater pool? It has its own issues. Then you go to a chlorine-based pool, it has its issues too. So we kind of go there. Let's talk about the conversion issue. Where does conversion happen and why is there an issue, Doc?
So liver, gut, and then periphery generally is where it's going to be done. And then the conversion issue comes down to between T4 and T3 or reverse T3 and T3. And typically you're needing zinc or selenium there, but that doesn't tell you why. Now, it could be just simply you have a zinc deficiency or a selenium deficiency. It could be just absolutely simple. But it could also be like, especially with reverse T3, it's kind of like homocysteine and some of these other big markers. Inflammation is going to increase it. Like, okay, that's a very general thing. And we like to throw around inflammation all over the place. And of course, there's a million causes to inflammation. So that would be the big one that we need to figure out. Stress can cause it. There's a lot of things that will cause it. It's not a marker I like to run reverse T3 just because we're generally kind of figuring out all the stressors to the body's system and that sort of thing. So, but general inflammation and stressors to the system will cause conversion issues along with zinc or selenium deficiencies.
Yeah. So I love that. So if I go to like where I would say, if you go to a doctor that says they're like a thyroid doctor, that thyroid doctor should pretty much never talk about your thyroid, because all of the conversion, all the activation, all of the problems that go wrong with a thyroid are elsewhere. So when you walk
in, primary thyroid issues are relatively rare.
Really rare in our offices, right? Because once again, a real primary thyroid issue is going to have its own, almost like urgent kind of needs. You're going to know, say you're a kid that develops one at like 2 years old, things go wrong fast when it's primary thyroid disorders. So everyone wants to talk thyroid. What about T3, T4? And it's like, look, that is part of the story, but that's what we're monitoring while we treat everything else. And that's where a lot of people, I always say, medicine's a little bit more complicated than most lay people think, but a little bit easier than medicine makes it sound. We're just laying right in that middle. And I can't remember if I said it in the last podcast or not, but it really seems like, it's like people learn enough to know they got to run a full panel, but they don't know enough to know why they've got to run that full panel.
Similar to people who think that you should have, a complete lab thing every year, a lab set every year. And it's like, you're thinking it does more than it does.
Yeah, for sure. Like it gives you all the secrets to your story or something.
Yeah. And it's like, how many people come in and ask, hey, can you run all the vitamins and minerals in my blood work? It's like, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And once again, you can run them and it can be a lab point or a point of reference or something like that. Yep. But it doesn't tell you why you're low in the zinc. Doesn't tell you why you're low in that selenium, which are huge in thyroid conversion and stuff like that. The other thing that I was going to say is just once again, nowadays we're going to talk about estrogen a little bit, but even more important than estrogen is testosterone therapy. And that's why I believe like testosterone for females is one of the most toxic hormones that someone can add. Testosterone directly increases SHBG, and SHBG and testosterone directly bind to those thyroid hormones. They're more affinitive, or in other words, they're going to bind better to your thyroid hormones than estrogen. Estrogen's more like it kind of stops the process from happening, whereas testosterone is like directly competing for absorption spots on the cells. And so I think that that's an important one. A lot of women like don't like that I take away their testosterone. But the reality is, once you're getting healthy, you're not seeing that much. But testosterone, going back to testosterone, just like thyroid, people want a thyroid test. People want a testosterone test. But once you get your testosterone test and find out that it's low, what are you going to do about it? Right? It's not just like injections or pills. That's not the way it works. That's not holistic. But they're obviously, you can do those things, but they're not going to be nearly as effective as figuring out why you got low in testosterone in the first place for both males and females.
I mean, that's what I had a patient recently on progesterone/testosterone therapy and level thyroxine.
There you go.
It's like, oh my gosh. And it didn't change anything. That was the thing, is like, she's complaining of certain symptoms and it didn't change anything. And I'm like, you probably, like, you might want to think about it.
Yeah. So a lot of people come in and they ask, like, hey, how do I get off my thyroid hormone? And we'll do that in the Q&A another time. But like, can I get off my thyroid hormone? And I always say that my first goal, and you can tell me how you approach this, doc, but my first goal is to get you feeling well on your thyroid hormone. You're on levothyroxine, you're on Synthroid. Let's make sure that you feel good. Everything's functioning well while you're using that Band-Aid. And then we can talk about, like, okay, can you decrease that dose, or how do you get off of it? How do you approach it, doc?
I mean, yeah, that's the same. I kind of approach a lot of medications like that, especially because, I mean, you know, it's outside our scope anyway. So
yes,
it's a little easier to go that route and then be like, okay, time to go talk to your doctor. I think you might want to see about coming off of it, but, you know, go have that discussion since you're doing so well.
Yeah, I haven't found any problem locally with someone when their TSH goes below 0.5. of their doctor saying, hey, let's cut back on that medication.
Right.
like you said, yeah, we don't manage those medications ourselves, if I made it sound that way. But long story short, like, we're essentially trying to prove that what we're doing is working. You go and see the lab, says that it works. Now you're going to get off your medication because your lab no longer warrants it. So, and same thing I always tell people with psychiatric medications, if they're going to work with their doctor to cut it in half, great. When they get when they go half on their medication, they should feel better rather than depressed or anxious, right? They cut it in half, like, I feel amazing. Great. Now you can disclose that to your doctor and you guys can work on what's the plan to get off it completely if you're feeling better on a decreased dose. So yep. Yeah, medication approach is a whole complicated thing, but we want to get you healthy before you just start pulling medications off.
100%, because, I mean, that can just drop the world from underneath you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I actually had a lady yesterday, it hasn't happened to me in a long time, 32 medications, 32 prescription medications and aggressive ones. And like, my main goal, like, there was like 6 for asthma, right? And I was like, okay, if I can just fix the asthma, we can get you off 6 medications. Now you're down to 28 medications, which is still a ton. But we can slowly, it's not the typical patient that walks in, but she was referred to applied kinesiology by other people. And she said, hey, we have great docs. And so I can't remember what state they were in, but so she started searching for applied kinesiologists and ran into me. So it's pretty funny how that works.
Nice.
Okay. Let's say, so we've already talked about a little bit of Hashimoto's. What are some of those Hashimoto's trigger? Where do people need to dig into that autoimmune story?
So I think number one, foods, because it's so easy to do on your own. I mean, there's the 6 most common ones. Gluten's probably the number one that's implicated with Hashimoto's.
Right.
And then you also have dairy, nightshades, you have corn, you have soy, you have eggs. Those are the big ones. Now, obviously, it could be a random other one. I haven't seen it when it comes to a food. It's usually one of those. It's not bad. Like, let's say it is nightshades, which is your tomato, pepper, potato family. It's not a bad idea to go grain-free anyways or legume-free. Just start eating healthy because it's going to decrease the inflammation. But don't mistake one of those foods just because it's helping you to feel better as the main trigger.
Yeah, I think that that's pretty important. I think everyone comes in because their neighbor got a thyroid pill and they just want that. But I do think that, you know, it's up to you oftentimes how fast you want to heal, how often, you know, and I'll even say it with weight loss. It's not quite cut and dry with weight loss, but it isn't with thyroid either. But if you go hardcore at your diet and avoid like your actual food allergy and you clean up all the toxins in your environment, you're going to see a faster result, generally speaking. Not always, but generally speaking, if you go at it all in, you get a better result rather than someone coming in and saying like, do I really have to avoid, you know, gluten and dairy? It's like, no, you don't have to. We might be able to dial it in for you and you only got to avoid one. But the reality is if you just clean up really clean diet, you're going to see a faster result with thyroid. And more people need to kind of have that attitude of like, I know it's tough, but are you going to do this or not? Right. Or we're going to take this. And that's kind of a hardcore approach. And I'm nicer in the office, but on the podcast, we don't have to be nice. So the reality is like, are you going to do it or not? It's completely up to you.
I mean, I like that the way you stated that, because I have seen it. I've seen somebody where gluten was the main cause of their Hashimoto's. They removed it, and it took them a good year, because that was the only thing they really did. It took them a good year to finally feel energetic. And I wouldn't say they're all the way there by any means, but they're a whole lot better than where they were. And so that would be a big one. Go towards paleo. Remove gluten. Remove anything else that's inflammatory. Find the main cause. But then what are we going to do as doctors? We're going to go the extra mile and say, and see what is going on with your immune system, how in the way that we're going to support the immune system. Like, how do I support the Treg cells to help them regulate everything and suppress the inflammation going on? Do they actually need turmeric? Like, it's so popular out there, turmeric or resveratrol. Mm-hmm. It could, like, I've seen it and I've given it to help lower certain inflammatory compounds that your body's creating. That helps them get there even quicker.
Yeah.
So yeah, diet can be a huge. And then I think the other thing we run into is, how often is it just Hashimoto's alone? Or do they have other issues?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I mean, probably the biggest primary story that I see that's other than Hashimoto. So I'll just kind of give you my quick autoimmune spiel. I would say autoimmune is, you know, just those three main things that I talk about, right? It's foods, it's infection, and it's toxins, right? Just to keep it super simple, it can be more complicated, but let's just leave it like that. And then there's autoimmunity secondary to other things. But other than the autoimmune story, you know, you're looking at liver health and how many people have fatty liver in America. It's like 40% of America has fatty liver, and they don't have to be overweight. They can be a skinny female or a skinny male that has fatty liver. Now you're taking that conversion, where it's, you know, arguably it's 60 to 80% of your thyroid conversion, and you're just decreasing it. But you may only be decreasing at 20%, but 20% decrease in energy is significant. Whenever I talk energy in the office, I talk hours in the day. So let's say that you're awake 16 hours and then you drop from 100% 16 hours to 80% energy. You lose 3.2 hours of energy in your day. So like, instead of you being able to stay up till 10 with energy, you're only up till 6:30 or something like that with energy. Then you're like grinding it out the last couple hours. And that's, so I think that's more of an appreciable thing. So when I tell people I'm going to help them with their thyroid and it starts to get better, I'm like, just expect a half hour here or there. Right? You're not looking for, your life's not going to change. Your kids aren't going to be easier to take care of. You know, your relationships aren't going to improve. Job's not going to get better. Like, you're just going to have a little bit more energy to do it. So I think that's where I start with thyroid. And then we start addressing the other things, because oftentimes people think the thyroid is causing everything. And oftentimes it's other things causing the thyroid. Biggest one in the office that I pet peeve is constipation. Okay. So like, that's like, everyone's like, oh, I'm constipated because my thyroid doesn't work. I swear every naturopath in Arizona says that. And I just don't find that to be as critical.
Not from thyroid. No.
Yeah. It's just,
yeah, gallbladder. Sure. Gut issues. Yeah. Sure.
But yeah, I did have one guy, he's been with me for about a year. He's been pretty consistent on his visits, maybe every other month. And he came in to get off his thyroid medication, but he also had this like chronic constipation. We fixed his constipation and everything was perfect. And then all of a sudden he went to diarrhea, right? And he goes to diarrhea, and it was that thyroid drug that he was taking, because by the time we ran the lab the next time for his thyroid, he'd actually been over-medicated. So now he was like, his thyroid was perfectly fine. And so it was causing loose stools because it was overstimulating. So let me just cover that last thing, because it's another pet peeve of mine. I have a lot of pet peeves when it comes to thyroid, because everyone's taking medication. Thyroid hormone in an overstimulation situation feels like stress and insomnia. So I see a little less of the thyroid medicated patients these days, I think just because I'm getting less medicated people. But in general, I would say like one of my old number one causes of insomnia, which is that people are on too high of a thyroid medication. They're trying to push that thyroid medication so far while ignoring all other things. So that's kind of how I see it there. What else do you think we can do for the thyroid, Doc?
I think we covered a good portion of it. I mean, the big one that I have come across, and I mean, this is going to be more of a pet peeve side of mine, is yes, Hashimoto's is really important, but let's not neglect the other major things that affect the thyroid. And I mean, we've already touched on this several times. The blood sugar, gosh, I have seen it so often lately, where somebody's not eating enough protein, they're eating too many carbs, and then we get pigeonholed into thinking, it's still my immune system attacking my thyroid. And it's like, no, you're not eating enough protein and you're eating too much carbs, too many carbs. And you got to fix that. And it's like, it's a struggle for a lot of people to eat more protein when they realize how much protein they need to actually consume per day.
Right.
And then for many people, because they haven't done it for years, you tell them, well, you got to eat like 100 grams or something like that. They're like, what does that look like, doc? Like a pound of meat. And then I think it's hard. And, or we try to get the protein levels up via like protein powders or protein bars, and then the calories sink. And if you don't have enough calories, you're going to be tired.
Yeah.
And so it ends up being super complicated when it should be super simple. So that's probably the other one that I see all the time that I'm trying to help people with, is a blood sugar dysregulation that's leading to a thyroid problem. Whether or not they have Hashimoto's, it doesn't even matter, because this has to be addressed.
Yeah. I think you mentioned it earlier, but chronic viral, I think we need to be aware of that all the time. Estrogen dominance, right? So by the time someone comes and sees a holistic practitioner for weight gain due to thyroid, that weight gain has probably led to estrogen dominance at some point in time.
And it's just so common, like you were talking about. So common.
Yeah.
Have estrogen dominance.
Yeah. And in fact, I had a patient today that came in and actually it was just like wellness. Like they didn't have anything wrong with them. And I was like, oh, for sure, I'll find an estrogen issue. That's always shows up on a female that's like 35, 40. Didn't show up. And I was like, yeah, it's so surprising not to see it in a quick visit. But her signs and symptoms didn't indicate that. I just thought that I would find it. Right. Yeah. But we go along with that muscle testing. And so that's the next thing that I'll say is, like, not every doctor is well-versed in thyroid. Not every holistic doctor is well-versed in thyroid. There's a couple of questions I always want to ask. Is like, one, does that person believe that you can, at least to a large degree, put the thyroid into remission? And so I try to get that realistic expectation. So a couple of the questions we'll follow up with on the next podcast. But like, can you reverse nodules? 100% yes. Sometimes they go away on their own. Sometimes you got to treat them. Sometimes they're a pain in the butt. All of those are true. Can you get off your thyroid hormone after 2, 5, 10, 20 years? Yeah. It just depends on how long you've been on it and how many problems you have. Let's say you've got like ulcerative colitis and fatty liver. So like severe gut issues and liver issues. And you're like, I need to get off my thyroid meds now. It's not happening. Right? You got to get healthy before that happens. And I think that that's probably the biggest thing that I want to share in this podcast is like, don't go to your holistic practitioner trying to fix a thyroid without an intention to get healthy as a human. Because that's the biggest step. And so people always want to come in and they just want to say thyroid so that they can lose 20 pounds. Well, another thing that I'll bring to your attention is like, it's really 1 out of 20 women that I see, like less than 5% are taking a thyroid prescription and losing weight. The rest of them take it, maybe feel better, but I don't see them lose 30 pounds. Have you seen the same thing, doc, or no?
I mean, everyone struggles with the weight issue. And yeah. I mean, it's a very common thing that somebody's coming in with. And it's not just another little pet peeve of mine, too, is the common thing they're told, eat less and move more. It's like, oh, come on. If that worked, people would be thin. And it just doesn't work. We keep repeating it. And it's complicated. It can be really complicated because the thyroid, the insulin, hormones like estrogen, that sort of thing. So no, absolutely. That's kind of how they're presenting. Even in my office, weight gain is always a difficult, either they're already thin or they have extra weight and it's just super difficult to get it off. And right. So they just need that extra help. Diet's not doing it alone.
Yeah. I think it wasn't turning it into a weight loss podcast, but we will say like, the people are always like, you know, I'm eating less than my caloric intake. I'm doing things like that. The thing is, when your cells, your mitochondria get sick, when your cellular health is poor, those little calorie charts don't really make as much sense as they used to. They're all based upon algorithms and percentages and things like that. You step on the scale, it measures like your impedances and stuff like that. They're all based upon percentages. They're not necessarily based upon who you are. They don't know if you have heavy metals and mold in your system. And at that point in time, and assuming you have a thyroid issue, cells are turning slow. But let's say we get the thyroid working and the cells are turning at the right rate and they're making the right amount of ATP. You could still be years away from getting your body to like what it was when you were toxin free. And so there's just so much more to that weight loss story than just fixing the thyroid. The only other thing I'll say is thyroid is highly correlated with mood. So if you have the weight gain, you have all these symptoms and you have poor mood, sometimes that thyroid can help. I will say, like, you know, I doubt you use it a lot, but I do use a thyroid glandular on plenty of patients. No hormones, obviously, in them. But I do use them, and I do find that over time they do rebuild that thyroid. Most of my patients are going to see nodules either stop increasing in size or decrease in size or disappear, one of the two. So we do see that. You do see a reversal of tissue damage as people get healthier. Now, can we guarantee on our own? No, we can't guarantee anything. But the reality is the health.
That's always a struggle for a lot of people. They think, hey, can my thyroid bounce back? And they've been on level thyroxine for years or Hashimoto's. And I'm like, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my old, like, if I, just to give people a number, I say, if you've been on it more than 5 years, it's definite maybe, right? Like, it's a probably not. Less than 5 years, I'm saying probably so. How long that takes, it just depends. Once again, depends on how much tissue destruction you have, how many nodules you've had. I have people functioning with half thyroids, either born with half a thyroid or had half a thyroid removed. So you don't have to have a full functioning thyroid gland to work great as a human, but there's more to that. So anyway, we'll cover a lot of the Q&A because I think a lot of those will go into detail. And I think we'll do another one on just lab patterns. That would be really cool for people just to be able to kind of self-diagnose at home or know what to bring to their doctor. But this is kind of that overview, you know, of those big things, the blood sugar, the Hashimoto's, which is food toxins and infections, the hormones, which always do that. So you can focus on any one of those three things and your thyroid health will start to increase. And then you might need more help with the doctor to kind of dial it in. Doc, still able to get a hold of you on your website?
Yep. Easy to get a hold of as usual.
Okay, cool. So yeah, why don't you guys reach out to us if you have questions? A lot of us find us on Instagram. I have not been getting as many questions on Instagram, so I answer as many as I can, as frequent as I can, but I don't get 100 anymore. So, you know, you might actually get your question answered if you submit one on there. So follow us on Instagram. Anything else you want to say about thyroid before we leave, Doc?
Oh, no, I think we have it pretty well covered. It's definitely something that we see all the time. So if you need any help, please reach out. We're just willing to help in whatever shape or form. I've been posting a lot lately, just messing around on Instagram. So hopefully some of that helps too.
Yeah, some of those quick little thoughts. And once again, don't fall into that category of thinking either, you know, either thing. There's two extremes, thinking that a holistic doctor can fix everything or thinking that the thyroid can never heal. Neither are true. You got to figure out where you're at for you and what you're doing to improve your health. And as you do that, you'll eventually start to feel well. And people are just on different time frames, hence why we call it the health journey. And it's not my journey. It's not Dr. Gabe's journey. It's your journey to go ahead and figure out your own health and heal. And we both have our own journeys that we have to do each day. So thanks for listening to the podcast, and we'll catch you on the next time, Doc.
All right. Take care.